Sunday, I'm hosting this girl's brunch and we're making our advent calendars with Cutwaters. We've all been like searching for different ones. I found rum mojito today, but it's from Woodman's and a spicy Bloody Mary. So I was
spicy Bloody Mary Cutwater sounds really good.
Yeah. I didn't want to like go out there and I didn't want to go to the grocery store. So I just Instacarted it. So he's got to show the ID and he did find them because all the other ones are like, they're getting the creamy ones or they got minis. And like, I'm not going to drink a lot of them. They're only like four flavors.
Yeah. I need to.
But it'll be fun.
I wish I could be a wine person. Like, I really wish I could drink wine and enjoy it and not get super hungover. And it's just the histamine, I think.
Honestly, for me lately, and I don't know if it's just because we haven't bought like a good wine. I only really like this one from Binny's that's like $7 and it's light. Like, it's not high alcohol content. Yeah. Otherwise, the other ones have been giving me like headaches, even if I have like a glass and a half or something. Except, so there's one from Cooper's Light and Bright we can do.
Yeah.
It's low alcohol though. It's 90 calories.
That must be why. These are like 11 to 13% alcohol, which isn't that high, but it's, I woke up the next morning, I had a glass and a half and then I drank a ton of water and I stopped drinking at like 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And still woke up like nauseous and and so I feel like I need to stick to vodka and tequila. Mm.
Yeah.
And so I might be drinking margaritas on Thanksgiving.
There you go. I just cut them down with a sparkling water and I feel pretty good with that.
Yeah.
We went to lunch on Sunday and it was a blood orange. She made it blood orange skinny margarita. It was really good.
Mm.
Okay. Are you ready? Welcome back to the Health Revival Show. Today we are diving into
iron. All about iron, ferritin, anemias. Okay. Because I think a lot of people, iron's not a very commonly ran lab panel, I find. It's most people, it's not like a standard lab panel that a doctor will run. A lot of doctors will run CBCs, CMPs. The thing is with the CBC, you can pick up a lot of anemia patterns. So you can pick up a hemoglobin, hematocrit, MCH, MCHC, RDW patterns. Those all can indicate anemias of either B12 folate or iron. But I think a true iron panel lets you understand what type of dysfunction it is, because there's a difference between having normal iron, but low ferritin, and having all across the board low levels.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that today because it's very common. And people end up just chasing this is one of my biggest pet peeves when people chase lab markers. So they're chasing thyroid levels. They're chasing iron levels. They're chasing these levels with supplementation or medication, and they're not actually addressing what truly is going on underneath. I see it the most with thyroid. They're just chasing T4 levels or TSH levels, or like, for example, when NPs or doctors will not medicate a T3 because a TSH is too low, even though the T3 very clearly shows the need to be medicated. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's just a lot of grind my gears when it comes to iron.
Yeah. And I think the really challenging piece with this is that functional medicine is so different from conventional medicine. They don't understand that taking oral iron can make a lot of things worse. Not only can it make you constipated, but it can feed pathogens. We talk about this a lot and we'll talk about it today as well, but unabsorbed iron that can feed parasites. It's like candy for them. Things like SIBO, H. pylori, or other infections in the body as well. And so what we can see when people start oral iron is not only are they constipated, but they're increasing bloating, gas, inflammation, and overall just not feeling well. And so the big thing here to understand is that there are different patterns. There are optimal ranges, which we're going to talk about. I mean, I remember my ferritin came back at like an 8 or a 9 when I was bleeding for like multiple weeks postpartum.
Yeah.
And my doctor was just like, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I'm like, no, it's not, because I'm tired. I'm really tired, right? So we'll kind of define for you all here, you know, what we're looking at in terms of iron, ferritin, which is your stored iron, transferrin, iron saturation, all those types of things. So understand that this can be associated with many symptoms, just like many symptoms can be associated with other deficiencies, right? So if we think about a B12 deficiency, which we will talk about, pernicious anemia a bit, we think about a vitamin D deficiency, we can think about many other deficiencies in the body that can result in symptoms such as fatigue, feeling cold, losing hair, maybe you are feeling inflamed, watery, or bloated. A lot of those things can be correlated. And this is where we want to do that comprehensive lab panel to look at all 11 systems of the body, not just look at an iron panel or a ferritin marker and be like, this is what we need to do, because you could be barking up the wrong tree very easily. But iron does impact everything. And we're going to talk about today something that many of you might not know about, and that is your thyroid and the connection with Hashimoto's. We're going to talk about the connection with your hormones, energy, mood, bleeding patterns, and detoxification. And so again, this is something that if your doctor has not checked your complete iron panel with your binding capacity, percent saturation, and your ferritin, it's very cheap and easy to run. It's part of every panel that we do for our clients, and it is something that we would highly recommend, I think, at least twice a year. If you do have a history of iron anemia, for me personally, I have a few clients like that. We check it every 12 weeks because we are monitoring what we are doing in terms of our protocols. So number one, when we think about oral iron, this is the last resort, mainly because of what I mentioned before. Oral iron can make things worse. It can feed pathogens. It's also poorly absorbed, especially when our stomach acid is low. So the way that I generally address this is, number one, if we are looking at an anemia pattern across the board, I'll put in things like the lucky fish or foods that are rich in iron, but we want to support absorption. So stomach acid and vitamin C is very important. But then, as we're going to talk about a little bit later on, you might look at transferrin or biotin as well to really help. So even though, again, you're taking or you've been told to take oral iron and you're not feeling any different, it's because you're probably not absorbing it. And when we have other chronic conditions going on, maybe it is autoimmune like Hashimoto's, maybe it is chronic stress, you're in perimenopause or menopause, right? SIBO, H. pylori, postpartum, like it was for me, we can take oral iron, but it's probably not going to do us much good. And so I know that there's also an iron patch that if we were to recommend a true anemia case, iron, I would be doing the lucky iron fish and that iron patch while also supporting with like transferrin, biotin, stomach acid, and vitamin C.
Yeah, I see some people come in that are on iron because they were told that they have an iron deficiency and their iron levels are actually like 190, which you don't want iron much above like 130. Mm. And so when you get iron levels really high, it can actually start to create more oxidative stress because free iron will actually build up. And it causes oxidative damage, especially in Hashimoto's cases. This can be really harmful, but it also stresses out the liver. So your liver basically stores and generates iron when it needs to. So like it stores it and then it lets it go and releases it when the body needs it. So if you're taking a bunch of iron and putting more stress on the liver to store it and manage it, you're just creating more stress in the system and you're not fixing the problem of why iron was low in the first place, right? And then like Liz was saying, iron will cause these stomach issues, burning, it can cause bloating, constipation, nausea, and they create a lot of times more symptoms than can actually support. So if you want to go a better option, we really like iron patches because of the digestive issue that typically causes iron deficiencies in the first place. I actually just talked about this on my story today. Like someone asked about nutrient deficiencies and how long to supplement them. And I was like, well, you can test for nutrient deficiencies. You can do an HTMA. You can do even blood work can give you a lot of insight into nutrient deficiencies, Cyrex testing. But the problem isn't the nutrient deficiency. The problem is why you're having the nutrient deficiency. Yeah. And so if you're going to supplement it orally, you might not even be absorbing a lot of those nutrients. And so that's where patches can actually be really helpful with iron. You can get these on Amazon. You just find iron patch and you take one a day and it can give you into the bloodstream, which is going to be a lot better absorbed and utilized by the body than via the gut. Lactoferrin is also very important here because it improves iron absorption. Biotin is a huge one. So biotin supports iron storage as ferritin. So this is for the people that have maybe normal iron levels. That's going to be around like an 80 to a 130 would be considered a normal iron level. But you have a low ferritin and it's been chronically low. This is because you are not basically getting the storage of iron into that cell. A lot of times that has to do with inflammation of the cell, oxidative stress around the cell, and then stomach acid support may be needed when you are taking iron to be able to absorb the iron.
All right. If you're dealing with water retention, you're waking up puffy, your ankles or your wrists are really swollen, or you can't get your rings off, and maybe you're even dragging throughout the day, no matter how much water you drink, there's actually a good chance that you're not actually hydrating properly.
Exactly. Because water alone is not enough. You need electrolytes. You need sodium, potassium, magnesium, because those things actually pull water into your cells. Otherwise, you're basically just flushing it out and wondering why you're still tired, you're still bloated, and you're still sluggish.
But here's the thing. Most electrolyte supplements out there aren't helping you in any way because a lot of them contain things like natural flavors, food dyes, and maltodextrin, which can irritate your gut. And these things can also spike your blood sugar when you're trying to heal.
That's why we both started using Buoy. It's super simple. There's trace minerals and electrolytes in liquid form. No flavors, no colors, no sugar, no sweeteners. And you squeeze it into whatever you are drinking. Water, coffee, tea, smoothies, you name it.
And it's clinically backed by science too. So studies have shown that Buoy helps you hydrate better, 64% better in fact. And that's data coming from key blood and urinary markers, not just marketing fluff. And honestly, you can feel the difference. I've had many clients tell me their digestion's improved, they have less headaches, and they're better energy throughout the day.
And Buoy isn't just for people that go to the gym all the time and sweat a bunch. They actually offer a 35% lifetime discount for anyone that's struggling with chronic illnesses. Things like POTS, Hashimoto's, Crohn's disease, chronic migraines, and every autoimmune condition. They're really committed to making better hydration accessible to people who need it most.
I actually throw it in my coffee every morning because it's such an easy upgrade. You don't even taste it, but you're definitely going to notice if you miss it.
If you're tired of playing hydration roulette and want something that actually supports your body, you've got to try Buoy. It's honestly one of the simplest ways to feel better faster.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to call out here, and this is just a clinical pearl that we were talking about, even for those with hemochromatosis, I know that lactoferrin has been used, but also in menopause. So when you look at that, the lactoferrin is a multifunctional glycoprotein. So it enhances the absorption and transport while minimizing the oxidative stress and GI side effects that are often seen again with just more of the traditional iron supplements. And so when we think about menopause, levels naturally decline with age, particularly during this time where we are losing estrogen and progesterone. And because that estrogen isn't being produced, that is going to impact lactoferrin synthesis in the body because estrogen actually regulates it, which is really interesting. And so the decline in estrogen can contribute to a functional iron deficiency pattern where ferritin appears normal or even elevated, yet iron remains sequestered and unavailable for red blood cell production. So again, this is where you're going to look at a full pattern, you're going to bleed blood count, those types of things, and then you're going to think about symptoms as well. So fatigue, low energy, anemia, again, despite adequate iron intake. Lactoferrin is also a very powerful anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, so that can help lower hepcidin levels, freeing up stored iron for the use in hemoglobin synthesis, while simultaneously reducing inflammation and protecting tissues from that oxidative damage. So beyond iron metabolism, lactoferrin supports mucosal immunity, promotes a healthy gut microbiome, and enhances nutrient absorption, which again, we know can decline during menopause and as we age because of low stomach acid naturally due to, stress, low B12, zinc, all those types of things that are all impacted. So if you were going to do lactoferrin, generally we're doing like 100 to 300 milligrams a day to improve ferritin and hemoglobin levels, restore energy, and reduce inflammation, especially in the cases of anemia of chronic disease, which we're going to talk about. Combining lactoferrin, though, with vitamin C, B12, and folate can further enhance and optimize red blood cell function. So that is another thing as we get into this a little bit more for you to be looking at your B12, your folate, your homocysteine, other markers on the complete blood count, MCV, MCHC, MC, all the different types of blood cells, right? The sizes of blood cells, because it can tell you if there is a need for different types of B vitamins. Again, B6, B1, theamine, that's, very important too. So a lot of this is important to see the whole panel, but then at the same time, important that you're looking at the comprehensive panel to look at everything else. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism and why healthy iron levels are non-negotiable. So we know that iron turns into heme, which your thyroid needs to make T4 and T3. TPO antibodies, the enzyme that builds your thyroid hormone, requires heme. And so when ferritin or heme is low, what you're going to see is that thyroid hormone production drops, an increase in fatigue, slower metabolism, hair loss and hair thinning, worsening, poor detoxification, and TPO antibodies rising because of oxidative stress. So therefore, we would make this connection that we can't optimize thyroid unless we've optimized iron. Because you're going to continue to think low here, right? If you have low iron, you're going to have low functioning thyroid. So ferritin, this is the storage tank. And this is where I have always said to women, previous clinical training shared between 70 and 90 is where most women feel kind of optimal, right? We're going to talk about some ranges being wider than that and, menstruation and things. But if you are somebody who is struggling with fatigue, this would be the one marker that I would really go and check, especially if you know that you bruise easily, you have heavy periods, or maybe you have a history of anemia. And this is one thing that I've seen more and more, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too. So chronic cases that we deal with in our practice, right? I'm seeing more patterns of higher iron and low ferritin, and individuals have been told by their doctors just to take iron. And I'm like, well, that's just going to make this worse, because then you're going to get yourself into a case of iron overload. Mm-hmm. And I know you have shared on the podcast before, in the case of hemochromatosis, right? Overtly high iron, high ferritin, all that stuff, donating blood mm-hmm. to thin things out because people were feeling like really heavy in the legs.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen it. So the hemochromatosis is basically a genetic variation that causes people to store more iron. And so they naturally tend to have higher iron levels. They'll have higher ferritin levels. And the problem with this is that because iron turns into heme, you end up with really thick, big red blood cells. And so when we have bigger red blood cells, we have more red blood cells, you start to get a slower blood flow, which can cause a lot of heaviness for people in their legs. And so I've seen this with some of my clients, and also our medical team, Vital, will talk about this as well, to essentially give blood a couple times a year to help thin out the blood ultimately. You also need to avoid vitamin C in these cases, because vitamin C will cause a higher absorption of iron. And so if you know you have this, you hopefully have been informed of that, because vitamin C is such a common supplement and it's in a lot of different things and it's in a lot of different drinks and foods and things of that nature. It's just something that you have to watch when you have this predisposition. But yeah, this is why testing iron is so important. And unfortunately, I've worked with a couple of cases where they've shown a very clear hemochromatosis pattern, and I was the first one to bring it to their attention, and they've gone to a hematologist with that information, and the hematologist was like, it's basically not bad enough for us to do anything. You have to come back when it's worse. And it's like, what kind of education or help is that? That's ridiculous.
Especially if
you're symptomatic. Like, she was having fatigue, which is very common with high iron levels. It can be common with high and low, because again, too low, you're having anemia. Think of it like this. Think of your blood flow being like really, really watery, right? That's not going to be able to carry nutrients very well through the body. So you're not going to have good circulation. You're not going to have good energy. But then if your blood's too thick, like syrup or like peanut butter wouldn't actually happen, but like think like syrup, that's when there's too many red blood cells. Your blood's not going to flow very well. It's going to put more pressure on your arteries. It's going to put more pressure on your system. You have headaches, you have migraines, you have high blood pressure, all of these things. So you want to be in the middle. Both of them will cause fatigue, because both of them are not allowing for proper circulation. And so we need to be checking these levels. It's why we run it on all of our lab panels. And it can change, because it can be reflective of like what you ate that week, right? I see iron change pretty frequently. I don't see ferritin change as much. So that's why you need to run all of them and make sure that you're putting it together with the rest of the panels, right? I don't act on just an iron panel. Is it also reflective in your hemoglobin, your hematocrit? Those are going to be more chronic, longstanding markers of iron deficiency. And so if I see all of those low, okay, now I can kind of trust this iron panel a little bit more and know that it's really reflecting what I want it to reflect. But if iron shows a little bit low and all of their other markers are fine, their hemoglobin's fine, I'm not going to be like, okay, we need to be on iron mm-hmm. or we need to be on some type of supplement, right? So just something to consider when it comes to looking at the big picture of labs. And when you are menstruating, it can be hard to keep iron levels up, because especially if you're someone that bleeds a little bit more heavily, we need to look into, do we need to support estrogen detox more? Do we need to support inflammation? Do we need to support progesterone? Like, what is causing this really heavy bleeding? We've talked about it before on podcasts. You should not be bleeding through a large tampon in less than like 2 hours. The flow is too heavy. It's just too much. So indication of if that's you, we probably need to be acting on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when we think about that, optimal range, as I mentioned before, 70 to 90 is where most people feel good, but especially for menstruating women, keeping it above a 60. And so below a 60, when we have low iron, low ferritin, you actually going to see heavier periods. So that, you know, is a vicious cycle, obviously. When we're below 60, your body can't make enough thyroid hormone, as we talked about, grow healthy hair, maintain energy, repair our tissues, detox efficiently, and balance our hormones. So this again is where we have to look at the whole pattern and then say, okay, what would make the most sense for this person? Do I need to put biotin in? Do I need to put lactoferrin in? Do I need to put vitamin C and stomach acid support in? Or maybe all of those things, right? Do I need to increase, based upon her diet, foods that are rich in iron or other sources of iron that can really help naturally? Because we also want to make sure that we're supporting a healthy menstruation or menstrual cycle. And when we're thinking about heme in general and an iron in general, like this plays a big role with our blood vessel constriction, clotting regulation, right? And then when we are shedding that uterine lining, we want to make sure that we're in a good spot and we're not becoming, like, I know a few of my clients, they become very tired and very fatigued right after because they've lost so much blood. And so historically they were taking iron during their period or shortly after, but it's like, all right, we can do other things rather than just trying to put a Band-Aid on it. We want to get to that root cause and really help resolve it for good. When we think about the shifts into, you know, menopause, perimenopause, those hormones are fluctuating. We know things can be all over the place. And this is generally when we see iron deficiency start to really show up. In menopause specifically, obviously when your periods are stopping, but you've had years of depletion behind you, meaning years of low ferritin, low stomach acid, and poor absorption, it's not just like a reset automatically. You still have to go in and fix some work. We always say menopause is the great,
It's a great revealing, or a great softening.
Yes. Like, great reveal.
Yeah.
It really is, because it's going to show you, it's really going to highlight things that have been off for so long and kind of under the hood. And listen, like, we get it. It's frustrating. I was chatting with a client yesterday. She's like, so this is like a forever thing, right? I'm like, well, yeah, if you want to optimize your health and you want to feel good, much of the hard work can be left behind, but there's still things that you need to tweak and adjust, especially as you go through different seasons of life. So yeah, we're never done, really.
Yeah. I always say that menopause taxes systems and it basically tests them. Like, is this system up to par? Because when you're having normal fluctuations of your hormones in pre-menopause times, it's very predictable. Your body is clearing relatively similar levels of hormones at the same time throughout the month. And if you're overall kind of balanced, it's not going to cause too many issues. And most people are like, okay, I can deal with a little bit of cramping or a little bit of heavy bleeding for a couple days out of the month. But once menopause hits, unfortunately, you're getting much larger swings of hormones. You're getting progesterone dropping off that's not really supporting or balancing out estrogen anymore. And now your body has to clear and detoxify so much more. Even with now we have the stimulation of potentially histamine. Histamine clears down the same pathways as your hormones and neurotransmitters do. And so you essentially are just putting a larger load on your detoxification systems. And so unfortunately, if those were already a little fragile to begin with, they maybe were, you know, just barely getting by. Well, now you're going to start struggling. And people are like, it's my hormones. No, it's probably the fact that your systems just weren't really up to par, or you need to bring in additional support to them. And you're experiencing that now. You know, you're experiencing the, unfortunately, histamine reactions of like heart palpitations, headaches, flushing, bloating, constipation, insomnia, whatever it might be, or you're experiencing wateriness and weight gain because estrogen fluctuations are happening. Again, digestive issues can start to happen with that. And so I think it's just a matter of people not running into that brick wall over and over again and taking a step back and be like, okay, how can I best support my body in this transition phase? And maybe, you know, getting evaluation from someone that knows what they're looking at. Unfortunately, we both talk to so many people in DMs. It's like, I had labs ran. They said everything was normal. I have been challenging people. I'm like, send me your labs right now. I will look at them for 5 minutes and show you what is not normal. Mm-hmm. Like, I refuse to accept for these people that you feeling awful is normal. And unfortunately, most doctors don't have the critical eye or just take the time to truly dive into labs. Most people are not trained like Liz, myself, and our team. They just aren't. And so you're probably not going to see something because you don't know what to look for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like we've just been talking about, like, on our stories. I know I shared my labs. Okay. There's like 5 markers that are marked high or low according to conventional medicine. But for me, I'm seeing a lot of things that I can continue to work on and optimize and improve. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. I was actually listening to a podcast this morning with Leila Hormozi, and she was more so talking about when, like, high achievers lose their shit or want to lose their shit, basically. And she's been going through a lot of health issues recently, and I just appreciate her transparency, but it is so true. And I've been trying to share this more on my page too, is like, just because I don't have a lot of symptoms and things to, like, truly complain about the way, like, a lot of our clients have, right, doesn't mean that I am fully optimized. Like, I like to tell myself, and I know you do as well, that I'm more resilient than I actually am, because my labs are kind of telling me, hey, sister, you need to slow down, or you need to give me some, you know, extra support here. Like, I'm really, really curious to see how I do with iodine, because I am going to high dose some iodine for a short period of time since my T4 came back so low. And I would say if I look at other things correlated, I check the boxes. But for reference of this podcast too, as we start to go through these optimal ranges, I want to share with you guys, I'm 11 months postpartum, technically tomorrow as of the recording of this. I am just now back up to ferritin of 66. Like, it has taken me time because I was bleeding for like 14 weeks after having Ethan. And then my cycles were shorter. And then now I'm finally rebalancing to about a 27, 28 day cycle. And so just know that some of this stuff takes time because, again, I wasn't going to go in and dump a bunch of iron into my system, make myself constipated and have a bunch of GI distress, knowing that there's other things that I, you know, could do. And I always talk about postpartum being the time period where you need to replenish, because obviously you've just gone through, as I say, pregnancy is the most nutrient demanding and depleting time. So you've got to replenish these things. So when we're looking at ranges, and you can get a pen and paper or pause this and go get a pen and paper or come back and re-listen to this, these are what we're going to look for from a functional range. Your range that you're going to see on a LabCorp or a Quest report or whatever it is going to be much different. So these markers are really where we want to fall. So ferritin, the functional range is 50 to 150. Now, the caveat here, as we talked about, is it's hard to maintain it above 60 for menstruating females. It really optimal within this window is 70 to 90. And then just know that for men, because they don't bleed, they don't have menstruation or cycles, obviously, at least we hope. They weren't born that way, from what I know. They generally are higher.
Yeah. Okay. And just one quick thing on the ferritin. And iron, evaluate where you are in your cycle when you have this tested, right? Because if you're right after your cycle, it's going to show lower and we have to take that into account.
Yes. So if you are a cycling female, we generally say day 19 to 21 of your labs is where we're, you know, going to run our test. Serum iron functional range is 85 to 130. So again, that's just iron that's running freely available in the blood. Ferritin, as I mentioned before, that's your stored iron. So if it's low, you are depleted. If it's high, it's triggering, it's signaling inflammation. Transferrin, so think about this as like your iron Uber driver. This is optimal range 200 to 350. If it's elevated, your body is trying to move more iron. It's needing it somewhere. Iron saturation, percent saturation here is 35 to 45. This is how much iron is actually getting delivered into the cells. If that is low, you're going to see inflammation or a deficiency. So again, you might see, you know, a few things that are off here, and we're going to get into some of the patterns so that you can kind of detect this for yourself and then decide what to do. Or as we would recommend, have a functional practitioner guide you through doing things, because you're going to look at much more than just this, but we'll give you the patterns. Last one here is total iron binding capacity. And the range there is 250 to 400. And then we also have the UIBC, which is the, I'm forgetting what the U is. Some labs are going to say TIBC.
UIBC as much.
We don't, right? Some labs are going to say TIBC. Some are going to say UIBC, but they're essentially similar.
The unsaturated iron binding capacity.
Okay.
Reflects how much like extra room your blood's main iron transport protein has available to bind iron. So how much room is in the blood to be able to bind?
Got it. Okay. So if you have a lab that says UIBC, then you're looking at 150 to 300. And again, if there are few seats open, right? It's low. You're going to have inflammation, you know, or overload. Yep. So here's the two most common patterns that we see in women. So pattern one is a true iron deficiency. You are completed across the board. So you have low ferritin, low serum iron, low saturation, high transferrin, high total iron binding capacity. This is the woman who's exhausted. She feels cold all the time. She's dizzy. She's lightheaded. Her hair is falling out. She's shortness of breath, right? Remember that heme is very important for blood vessel constriction, blood clotting, those types of things, and just feeling really wiped out by exercise. So you need real iron support. As we mentioned before, do this safely. I would focus on all the other things first, such as stomach acid, vitamin C, iron-rich food, maybe get that iron patched, get the iron, lucky iron fish. It's even on Amazon. And then maybe pull in some biotin or transferrin. The next pattern is just low ferritin. So your iron is fine, but your storage is broken. And this is really common in people who have autoimmune Hashimoto's, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or SIBO, H. pylori, those who are postpartum, dealing with heavy cycles, or under chronic stress. So I think you could basically cover like 99% of the population within that. Because if you don't fall into any of the infection categories that you know of, you're probably in the chronic stress category.
Yep. Probably. So, and it's, you know, it's a poor conversion situation, right? So it's technically not a true deficiency going on when it's just ferritin that's low. It's more your body cannot convert it into storage. And so biotin is probably the number one thing that we see with this. So you cannot convert iron into ferritin without biotin. A lot of people are deficient in biotin. So we will do 10,000 to 20,000 micrograms. Micrograms, that's what I've had. And so that's kind of a dosage per day that you would bring in place if you are finding consistently low ferritin, but your iron levels continue to be fine. Low stomach acid. So iron, again, will not absorb if stomach acid is low. And this woman will need biotin, stomach acid support, vitamin C, lactoferrin, and only iron patch if iron is also low, right? So not oral iron, just the iron patch. Other anemia patterns and kind of what you look for, not all anemias are iron anemia, and there's three main patterns that we see. B12 folate anemia is probably the most common one, I would say. This is a macrocytic anemia, and your blood cells basically become too big, or they're essentially too big and not enough of them. And this is not caused by iron deficiency. It's caused by low B12, low folate, and poor absorption. So this we see MCV is high, I would say in 90% of cases that I see, MCV is elevated. And above a 90, 91 is going to be elevated for MCV. And so that means that the red blood cells are big. Your MCH may also be elevated. RDW is elevated above a 13. Red blood cells are elevated above like a 4.9 for females. Hemoglobin is above a 13.5 for females. Iron is elevated above an 130. Ferritin's normal. Homocysteine is typically elevated above like an 8 or a 9. And then MMA is also, that is methylmalonic acid, high, and that's off on a B12 insufficiency indicator. So these people also will experience fatigue, brain fog. We see actually tingling a lot with B12 deficiencies. So like tingling in the hands and the feet, because B12 is really important for nerve function. Memory issues, mood swings, feeling weak or off. And then anemia of chronic disease. You have iron, but inflammation traps it in tissue, so it can't be used. Very common with autoimmunity, Hashimoto's, infections, chronic inflammation, chronic illness. And then we also have, lastly, nomocytic, nomochromic anemia. And that is when your red blood cells look normal, but there basically aren't enough of them. So we see this with chronic inflammation, autoimmune diseases, kidney issues, chronic illness, early anemia. And in these situations, we have low red blood cells, low hemoglobin, but normal patterns for iron and ferritin, and MCH, MCHD, MCV. So basically it just is affecting red blood cells and hemoglobin and hematocrit. It does not affect the actual iron or ferritin levels. We see more like inflammation markers become elevated with this. So again, you gotta kind of know what you're looking for. You have to know how to read patterns. You have to know how to read the case, because blood work is separate from the case. You have to look at the entire person. You have to look at symptoms, what was going on at the time of testing. Like, blood work's a snapshot in time, and it can be affected by hydration from the day before. It can be affected by if you worked out really hard the day before. It can be affected by what you ate the night before and how stressed you are, like where you are in your cycle. There's so many things that can affect blood work. And so having the right eyes look at it is really important.
Yeah. And then to give you a plan going forward and to reevaluate. I think that's a really big thing that I know you've had a lot of these conversations too. We're hearing more and more from people like, well, my doctor said everything was normal, so I put my labs into ChatGPT, which I don't advise that you do. I mean, research and identify things that you can do to improve your health, absolutely. But when it comes down to actually putting a protocol together, understand that there are so many nuances, right? Like if we're looking at certain patterns and trends and then we're taking genetics into account, for example, like you can vary, let's just take B12. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can stimulate someone with B12, muscle B12, and make them more anxious. They can get this tired and wired feeling. They can start struggling with sleep, right? They can have this anxiousness, racing heart and racing mind. So we have to look at the person in front of us, but also take into account other, you know, things. And then obviously your environment and your diet and your lifestyle. And so I think that's a big piece. But the second thing is, if you are doing something to improve your health internally, externally, like, you know, I think about, you know, skincare, because I posted today about that. If it's not working for you, then don't keep using it, right? Like, don't keep doing the thing that's not working. And how will you know unless you retest and you reevaluate, other than, oh, wow, I really noticed that my symptoms have improved. And so that is just a little bit of a caveat there. This is something that we wanted to do to help you guys understand, because I think so many women are dismissed by their doctors. And it is so frustrating when your doctor is telling you everything is normal, especially when it comes to ferritin. I think the lab range for ferritin, like the bottom end, is 10 or something. And many women will live in this place of 10 to 40 on their labs for years. And they're just suffering when they don't have to. It could be as simple as adding biotin. It could be as simple as adding lactoferrin. It could be as simple as adding, you know, a good quality B complex that serves you and what you need. And so if that's something that you are looking for help with, you can always check the link in the show notes to schedule a call with our team. We do offer just standalone lab work and review, but of course we recommend if you are somebody that has autoimmune or you've dealt with chronic issues and you are tired of living that way and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, then that you go through, obviously, our full support program. So links are in the show notes. If you found this helpful, please share it. Share it out on social media. Tag us. By the time that this is aired, you will have seen a carousel, because it's going up this week, that I'm airing this around the complete iron anemia guide, so that you can visualize some of this stuff as well, because I have put some things into charts and then given you like next steps. If this, then that, right? A decision tree to help you start to maybe look for clues and things that you could do. I think obviously with biotin, it's very safe. It's very supportive in many ways. But again, this is not medical advice. This is for educational purposes only. So if you do choose to supplement something, please don't buy it from Amazon. Get a high quality supplement, maybe from Fullscript. We have those links that you can use as well. You're welcome to get that 15% off. But just know that this is something that impacts so many women and they don't realize it. If you have a friend struggling with fatigue, hair loss, all the things that we mentioned in this episode, please just copy it, share it over to her. It might be life-changing.